Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that have been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Hey, welcome, my friends, to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 66 countries, such as the Philippines, Australia, United States, Mexico, Canada, UK, all of Europe. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio, all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but make sure you look out for our 11 a.m. Eastern Time shows as well. Now you can join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. Never miss an episode by subscribing, rate, and review the show on iTunes or Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Google Play Music app, wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. Please rate and review our show so that we know how we're doing. On the show, I have entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters, and authors who are amazing at what they do and is creating an impact all around them. And my guest today does just that. This is a live show. If you're catching us live at 11 a.m. Eastern Time or 5:30 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday through Friday. So if you're catching us live, call us up, 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. You can call in, talk to myself, or talk to my guests and ask questions. Please help me welcome to the show the incredible Janie Lacey. Hey, how's it going?
It is going great. Thank you so much for having me.
I have really been looking forward to this episode because in my heart of hearts, this is such a taboo topic that nobody wants to discuss. We always want to talk about success. We always want to talk about the good things. We really don't want to talk about some of the bad things, especially contributed to like substance abuse, emotional disturbances, mental illness. Like it's almost like that one bad word that we don't say. We don't say mental illness or, you know, whatever. So I'm really looking forward to the show so that we can really just kind of dive deep and really let everyone know that it's okay to talk about these things.
Absolutely. You know, one out of three adults suffer from a mental illness, and 90% of those that struggle with addictions don't get help. You know, so it's either us or someone we know, someone in our family. We are all affected, but like you said, it's such a taboo. There's such a stigma around mental illness and around addictions that sometimes we can, as families, we can have the big elephant and we'll just have them join us on the couch versus addressing them. But, you know, it's such an important issue because it holds us back in our careers and having healthy relationships, being healthy parents. You know, when we can address these issues, it can just create such success in all areas of our life.
100%. So let's dive in and learn more about you. So the episode is titled Talking Mental Health with Janie Lacey. She is a nationally known psychotherapist and licensed mental health counselor, national certified counselor, certified sex addiction therapist. She is also a respected television commentator and founder of Life Counseling Solutions in Maitland, Florida. For almost 12 years, she has been enriching lives through her psychotherapy work and brings credibility and expert knowledge to audiences via on-air appearances. As a television commentator, Janie connects with viewers and is sought after for her psychological insights and practical advice on topics ranging from mental health disorders to relationship challenges. Janie has impacted audiences through various local and national radio, news, and television programs. For example, she has lent her expertise to national shows such as The Bill Cunningham Show, Daily Buzz, and Emotional Mojo. Janie is a popular professional speaker at national industry conferences and has the ability to energize a room while hosting events. She has authored numerous articles in local and national outlets on sex and love addiction, anger management, and relationship and sexual trauma. Her journey as a psychotherapist began when she worked as a counselor for a nonprofit where the clients had various psychiatric challenges, along with volunteering at an experiential camp for adolescents with behavioral challenges. In both clinical settings and in private practice, Janie has treated all forms of mental illness, substance abuse, grieving, job stress, emotional disturbances, sexual abuse, social and parenting issues. She is passionate about helping people overcome a variety of life's challenges. If you want to know more, go to www.lifecounselingsolutions.com. You can also copy and paste the Facebook and LinkedIn links right there in the show notes. Go check her out. She's everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, wherever. Wherever there's a social media, I guarantee you she is there. Connect with her. She is incredible. So the first thing that I want to know right off the bat is, what is your why? Everybody has a deep, deep why for what you do. So tell me about your why.
And I do have a why. You know, when I look at, I'm a big believer in we have to have a PhD in our own history. So it's not by accident that not only am I a business owner, but I'm a licensed psychotherapist in my business, because part of that story going back over 15 years is I did not believe in psychotherapy. I was one of those people that had a legalistic view that you give it to God and pray about things. Why would you go to a stranger? You know, just have this stigma, right? So I was part of that population that had the stigmatized thoughts of what mental health and counseling and psychotherapy was all about. So I was in my master's program pursuing my MBA because I saw myself as this businesswoman. God brought them both together, but at that time I just thought myself, okay, I don't know exactly what I want to do, but getting an MBA degree will lead me down the right direction. So in that, make a long story short, I was in that MBA program and I was not doing good in accounting classes. I was just struggling through some of the classes. And there was a program, I went to the University of Central Florida, and there was a program about leadership called the Leadership Enhancement Program. And I saw this and I was led to apply, even though they were looking for, it was a program for women, but it was looking for master's or PhD. And I did not even have my bachelor's degree, my master's degree yet. So I applied for the program, and lo and behold, I had gotten into the program, and I wanted to learn how to publicly speak, because part of that was going back to my 4 or 5 year old self. I had rotten teeth as a little girl. So all the way up until early college. Yes, a lot of people can't believe that because they see me everywhere and now it looks like I could speak very easy, but there's a passion and a story behind that, and this is it. You know, so dad didn't speak good English, had rotten teeth as a little girl. So even though I was older now, young adult, I would still talk and cover my mouth as if I still had those rotten teeth. And I wasn't aware of it until someone pointed it out to me. I already knew I had a lot of social anxiety around speaking and those types of things. So I got into this program, even though I didn't qualify. That's why I know it was a God thing. So I got into this program, and lo and behold, one of my goals was I wanted to learn how to publicly speak. So they paired me up, get this, with a licensed mental health counselor. And at that time, I was somebody who did not believe in counseling, blah, blah, blah. So they had paired us up together to go around the university and talk about how to bloom where you're planted, how to write your personal mission statement, all these types of things. So through being paired with, her name was Valeska, I got introduced to mental health and saw some of the things that she was doing. And I really connected with working with the individuals after the workshops, one-on-one, hearing their stories, getting to know them. And then that kind of led me to say, you know what, I'm in this MBA program, I'm not enjoying it, and this wild thought came to my head, why don't I apply and do what she does? So I had a mentor at that time, Dr. Dykin, who is still over the University of Central Florida's health services, And I went to him and I said, Dr. Dykin, I think I'm going to drop out of the MBA program and I'm going to enroll in a counseling program. And in my mind, I knew whatever his response was to be was what I was going to do because I thought so highly of him. And he's like, Janie, I don't know why I didn't think of that sooner.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
that's how I started going down the path. But obviously, there's more to it. So I dropped out of the MBA program. And get this, Sean, I'm driving in my car, and I hear on a radio station for this program because I was working during the day for this mental health program that came on the radio. They were advertising for a local program. So I applied to that program. And to jump ahead three full circle, about 7 years later, I was on that. I did a program. I did a radio spot for the program that I graduated from on that same radio show.
Wow.
The whole 360 moment. But the why, kind of going back to that, is that coming from my own family system, my dad had a second grade education, and he had addiction issues. And when I was 10 years old, something tragic had happened in my family. My 19-year-old sister was murdered by the father of two of her children in front of those children. And it disrupted and rocked my family's world. But when I look back, we had this big tragedy, but we didn't talk about it. You know, we went to the funeral. We did all the things around death that people do. But our family didn't talk about this big tragedy. First time I saw my dad cry. And I remember standing at the casket and my mom pulling down the blouse on my sister's shirt. And there was this mark, these marks around her neck. And, you know, we had all this trauma around this, but yet no one processed and talked about it. So when I entered this program, all of my own stuff started kind of flooding through. They kind of make you do your own work, which was a good thing. So when I look back, you know, my why is that there are so many opportunities that was there in my family that if we would have had help, if we would have had somebody that was educated, someone that was skilled, and
right.
can help us reduce the shame and the stigma around mental health issues, we probably would have had, as a collective family system, probably would have had a different trajectory in life. So when I think about my deceased sister, who was murdered, I'm a big advocate for domestic violence. And then when I think about my father who died of his addictions, they're my why. They're why I'm driven to help other families. They're why I'm helping people not to suffer in silence. Let's talk about these issues. There's help out there. There's techniques. There's research. There's all types of things that can help families overcome. So that's my why.
That's amazing. And it's crazy how everything comes full circle, right?
It is. It is.
That's amazing. I love it. Absolutely love it. So what was that transformation moment? Can you pinpoint that exact moment that changed your life, that put you on the path which you do now? Was it dropping the class, or was it that time in the car, or something else?
Well, actually, the transformation moment was actually when I was, so all of those things led me to going down this different path, of which I didn't have any. The funny thing is I didn't have any experience myself in going at that point, going to counseling and all of that stuff. It was strictly through God placing Valeska in my life and seeing and hearing her passion and seeing firsthand her being and how her education, her knowledge, her experience would give people hope, and being a witness to that drew me to her light. But me, myself, not having any experience at that point in time, I had since through my program, I had to get my own counseling and had to have those experiences, which were phenomenal in the sense that it helped me create insight where I couldn't see. You know, there's something in psychology called Jehara's window, and it's that place where other people can see it, but we can't see it. And then there's also a place where other people can't see it, and we can't see it either. And that's that place that we can all be in denial about our dysfunction, because we all have a shadow side and we all have a dark side. But the difference for all of us is if we put that dark side into the light and we examine it, we know it, we can integrate it into our being, and it can be something that can be a positive thing. But it's those things that when we keep that in a dichotomous self. So learning all those things about myself, and then I was in my internship program, in the master's program at Palm Beach Atlantic University, and I had to do an internship under supervision, and I was first time in the counselor chair. I look back, it's so crazy, but I was my first time in the counselor chair, and this woman had came in, and it was my first client, and we were getting scholarships from a local facility. So they didn't, there wasn't a website at that time. They didn't go on and see who they were seeing. So she kind of came in, and she was distant when she saw me, and I didn't, this is literally my first client ever. And as I'm talking to her and just kind of creating an introduction and establishing some rapport, she said, well, I don't think you can help me, and I'm going to leave. And I was so devastated. I was devastated. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed, like my first client ever. And she wants to walk out of the room. We haven't even been sitting here for 10 minutes. And I was like, just wanted to, literally just wanted to crawl under the couch because I'm like, okay, maybe I did all these flooded thoughts just kind of overcame me. Maybe I'm in the wrong field. Maybe I should have been in the NBA. You know, all that types of irrational thought. But I was so desperate. I said to her, you know what? I'm not exactly sure what's wrong, but just please, just let's do this one session. And at the end of this one session, if you really feel like I'm not the good fit for you, I will make sure that they refund you your copayment, and I will refer you to appropriate person. But I really would like for us to see if I can help you. I was just so desperate at that point, and in this state, I didn't want to be embarrassed. I didn't want her to go out, and my supervisor was like, oh, your first client, you know. So make a long story short, that client, we'll just call her Margaret, that client, Margaret, ended up being in my first, that year of internship. From that moment on, I worked with her for a full year while I was in that internship. And going back to the reason why she wanted to walk out was because of two things. Her experience with my race, for one, and then she thought because of the age difference between her and I, she had rode me off. She thought that her son probably was closer to my age. So immediately she created some judgments around who I was and wanted to completely block herself from even being open to my influence. But through the therapy with her and understanding her story, I understood very clearly why she felt the way that she felt. But that was just a moment for me to realize that to have the influence and the transformation inside of me to be able to connect, authentically connect with other people. She was probably the most challenging out of a couple of people in my life of doing this. And I look at her, and I'm like, you know what? She was a godsend to me in that sense. So understanding how, you know what, this is someone who was pushing 70s, and she'd never been to therapy. And then here she is coming into a room, and she's seeing someone that reminded her of certain traumas in her own life, and yet in that moment just wanting to go back to her normal coping mechanisms of anger and cut off and certain stereotypes. But through that process, I believe God also used me to help heal her. So someone I still keep in touch with to this day, and I look back, I'm like, you know what? That was a transformational time period for me because I was just kind of not even 100% sure if I was on the right path. I was questioning certain things, but, you know, God had put that person in my life for a reason, and that was literally my first client ever.
That's crazy. Well, thank you.
Isn't it? That's like a totally odd thing.
Nobody sees that. Like, we don't post things on social media, or maybe sometimes we do, but, you know, like that's what I believe that my listeners, when I talk to them and reach out, go, oh my gosh, I felt the same way. Like, I thought I was the only one. And, you know, so they see somebody as successful as you going, yes, absolutely, yes, you know, felt the same way. Now look at them. Okay, now I see hope. Because sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't help. You know what I mean? So, but thank you for sharing that. Absolutely. One thing you said that stuck out to me, I really want to kind of dive deep into this. Everybody has a dark side? Really?
Yes.
Really?
You know, and that's
even,
where we kind of look
even
at.
Even like pastors?
Mm-hmm. If you are breathing and you are human, you have a dark side.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter if you are going to admit to it or not, you know, and that can be, it can be anything from pride to your addictions to, you know, what we call rage fantasies. I mean, I could list it, you know, working with different people and obviously being exposed to many people's dark sides, I think is huge. But what keeps people stuck and what I think also keeps people stuck in not being able to find success and to do all the things that they want to do in their life, whether it's finding the right person to marry, whether it's in their careers, whether it's just enjoying life, is themselves. Sometimes we can sabotage our own journey in life because we don't understand who we are. And when we really understand who we are and we understand all parts of us, and we are also open to having, I'm a big believer, and I have this in my own life all the way up until today, accountability, having mentors, I will still seek supervision around tough cases, and being open to all of that stuff, but in a safe way. I think a lot of times people, you know, is that relational trauma, one of the areas that I specialize in. A lot of people are broken in relationships, so they isolate themselves, and isolation is one of the worst things that we can do, because one of the fears that people have is actually psychological isolation. No one understands me. No one's going to get me. No one's ever going to love me. Are you really there for me? All of these bubbles that go over people's mind, but no one ever really wants to admit to them because they think, well, if I really tell Sean all these things and all these thoughts that I'm having in my head, he's going to think I'm crazy. And of course, I can't let anyone know that I'm having all these things. So then the farther the distance that they'll create from what they're struggling with to the persona that they put out there, the more that they're going to struggle because they're going to continue to isolate themselves. And just like with some of the addicts I work with, one of the core beliefs of addicts is if people really knew me, they won't like me. So then they realize, or what their faulty belief system is that I'm the only one that can take care of my needs. And that's where they will go and deal with difficult emotions through what we call non-relational relief. You know, that could be ingesting a substance, that could be process addictions, sex, gambling, shopping, whatever that may be.
Wow.
So, you know, we have to know what that shadow is, and that dark side of us is the things that can get in our way and be held accountable to them. But the good thing about it, though, is we can integrate it into our personality, right? So if we have social anxiety, which I once did, you know, you have social anxiety because you're fearful of, you know, what people think, I'm going to sound stupid, you know, whatever it may be, you can use that energy and you can put it in positive places in your life, and that can help drive your passion.
My pastor is literally the nicest dude I've ever met. And I'm just thinking,
you don't want to think about having a dark side?
No! Like, I'm literally like thinking about everything he's saying, you know, social anxiety and this and this and this, and like, look, and I'm like, there's no way. But then again, I mean, you really know anybody. You know, I've met people that I thought were great people, and then I come to find out he beats his wife. Or one guy that I knew, I'm like, oh, he's like up and up. Like, he's the guy. Like this is the guy to lead the next generation. Like, he was like an amazing leader here. I had no idea. I had no idea. He was struggling for months.
And normally we don't. When people are in position of a public position, you know, one of the organizations I'm a part of is called Pure Desires. They're out of Oregon. And what we do in Pure Desires is that we help actually churches, pastoral families that have gotten into some type of sexual deviancy. So if the pastor has had an affair with someone in the congregation, they'll call us in and we will do.
No kidding.
We will help the family, or they're struggling with pornography, whatever it may be. There are many. They have the same issues that we have, and I'm saying we, meaning society. The only difference is they have a lot more to lose, right? Because they can be considered. Yeah. You know, we can think about all the news stories where. So that's when I try to, and even in my own life, is not to put people up on pedestals and not to put them up in a godly position, so to speak, put a God in my head, because everyone struggles with something. Right. It's the difference about pastors and us, though, Sean, is that they need to be a lot farther along than we are in our struggles to be able to bend down enough to help us up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something else you said that I'm kind of curious, you said a rage fantasy. What is a rage fantasy?
You know, so one of the common things, we have one of the premier anger management workshops and intervention programs in Central Florida at Life Counseling Solutions. And one of the things that we'll see that used to surprise me, it doesn't surprise me anymore, sometimes the most quietest, not always, so this is just a generalization, but sometimes the quietest, most kindest people can have the most darkest thoughts. So rage fantasies could be like, they could be looking at their boss and smiling, but they're thinking about taking their boss's head and running them over with the semi truck 3 or 4 times. while they're smiling, right? They have these dark thoughts of revenge and rage internally.
I do that every day. Okay? When I'm driving, I do it every day. I'm like, I just want to ram your car. I get out of my way. You suck at driving. Get out of my way. You know what I mean? Like,
and I'm glad you said that, because there's a certain part of that that's normal.
Perfect.
There's a certain part of that that's normal. So you are normal. I think where we see where it gets into the deviancy is where it gets to people and they will express it in passive-aggressive ways.
Sometimes people
think aggressive people, and I'm telling you this from a psychoanalytical standpoint, sometimes people think the aggressive people are the worst people to be in relationships with, for example. And to a certain degree, you should probably better want to be in someone that can express themselves, even as long as it's not abusive, that they can express themselves in anger because they're expressing themselves, versus the ones that will come out the side. It's passive aggressive. You don't know, but you kind of feel, you know, especially in the workplace, right? Well, you know, especially in relationships. So what's wrong, honey? Nothing, but yet you hear her slamming the cabinets, right? But those rage fantasies and those thoughts sometimes for people can be obsessive, right? It's not necessarily just like going in the traffic and, you know, thinking about all these people can't drive and just having like those types of thoughts in those moments about ramming their car or throwing a bottle on their window. Those thoughts can be fleeting. It's those where people can ruminate and they're thinking about it. They're obsessively thinking about it. Every day when I come to the office, I just want to take that boss and I want to do this, and that becomes a part of a dominant thought for them. It can disrupt their life.
Interesting. So I drive down the road and somebody is in the far left lane, which is not the Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
I got disconnected from my own show just now. That was
must
super
have been
crazy.
Something about talking about a road rage.
Right? As soon as I was like, so talk about driving, cut me off. I'm like, hello? So what I was saying was that if I'm driving in the left lane, which is the passing lane only, right? Like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, come on, like, move it. And my wife says, they can't hear you. Or I'm yelling at the TV about football or sports or whatever. And I'm like, come on. And, like, they can't hear you. Like, I'm totally normal.
The normal part is the expression of your frustration. The abnormal part would be, to your point, if you think they can actually hear you, right? But it doesn't sound like that's the case. It just sounds like you're expressing frustration out loud.
Right. I love it. Yeah, because
which to a certain degree, I think it's a great thing. You know, we have programs now shown for our kids to teach them, is what we call emotional coaching, is to teach kids to be able to express their emotions, because if they don't, they will act it out, right? So kids that feel bad will act bad. And the same thing for adults. So it's a good thing.
Right. So let's talk about the kids real quick, because we always talk about the generation of snowflakes and like all this other stuff. And I don't know how you were raised, but I know a lot of people that are successful because their parents whooped them. I mean, it was like you had a belt on a shelf, not an elf on a shelf. You have a go cut me a switch. You have a, you know, like, I mean, is there, do you think there, I mean, not because I was physically abused, like my stepfather before my mom and him divorced, you know, for like, from the time I was in second grade to the time I was seventh grade, I mean, beat, bad, alcoholic rages, drug rages. My mom was beat bloody. My sister and I were physically, emotionally, mentally abused, all that stuff. I saw a psychotherapist for a while, and it was all of the, you know, it was, I call it the woo-woo, fluffy fluff, like, how does this make you feel? You know, like all that stuff, you know? But I had a lot of stuff that I had to work through. Like, I was mad, angry, confused, whatever, like, and I used to get in fights in high school, like, all the time. So I had to go see somebody. And and one of the things that I'm really curious about, is there a direct correlation? We talk about, like, the participation trophies and everybody's a winner and, you know, to, like, the problems that we see with young kids killing themselves, or we see bullying problems, like, on an escalated level. School shootings, all that stuff. Is there a direct correlation between any of that, or is that just kind of just a part of life?
Now, there's a few things I would comment about that. There, right now, we, with our children, we are more, they, when I say we, I mean our children, are more connected than ever, but yet are disconnected. So there's a correlation to what's happening culturally. But when we go back to us being raised and being raised with old, what we call old school type parenting skills, that we kind of turn some of that pain into purpose, which I 100% can see that with you. When you turn that pain into purpose, then you're going to fuel forward, but it does not make it, because we can have someone, we can line you up with someone that has had the same type of background, and they could have repeated the same thing, or they could have not lived up to their potential. So somewhere along the line, right, some of that pain, that energy, which could also be the dark side, Sean, right, is turned into purpose, and it's turned into drive, it's turned into motivation and awareness, right? Because you are aware, because you're able to articulate it in that little sentence, aware that, you know what, I was abused, and this is what happened before this, but I went through this, and yes, it probably wasn't connecting with me at that time, but it was part of the journey. So when we look at what's happening culturally with our kids now, one of the things that is a key element, and I'm going to break it down for parents, is we have to teach our children confidence that they have a voice and boundaries and the ability to wait. So we look at those four areas. Sometimes, especially when you're talking about everybody's a winner, some kids need to be able to wait to win, and they need to experience disappointment. They need to experience all the emotions of life. But as parents, it's called the parental mirror. Our kids are learning who they are by how we view them. So if we're saying, we're a winner, you're a winner, rah, 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 and they don't have any adversity in a healthy sense where we can process it with them, they experience disappointment, that we don't just go out and buy them that Xbox that they want, that they earn it, those types of things. We're laying a foundation for life skills. So what we see, and I was having this conversation with someone actually out of Australia, Brent Jones, and, you know, he was talking about, you know, in his history, he's a 60-something-year-old man, that he's seen actually the evolution of boys, and that, you know, men used to, pre-World War II, it was 10% divorce rates, and that there was a certain setup that men, yes, they didn't know how to express their emotions, but they knew how to establish kingdoms, so to speak. They brought resources to their family.
Right.
You know, they had a certain system to them where the family trusted them to take care of them. Well, we kind of look at today's world, right? To a certain degree,
right.
I'm making general statements here. We kind of look at some of the parenting where we are raising boys and girls to stay boys and girls, right? Because we're not giving them that adversity. We're not giving them in a healthy dose then, so that moms will find their needs met through their young boys because dad's not there. So then she's enjoying keeping him
right.
as a baby, you know, but undisciplined children will turn to undisciplined men. So when we kind of look at these types of things in parenting, we can go all many different ways. But when I kind of look at those elements that across the board we have to teach our children, and that's why there has to be an alpha and a beta in the home. An alpha will be, you know, sometimes that disciplinarian, that person who's going to lay down the law. That beta could be that more loving, that more nurturing, and the balance of the two can create a good balance in the children's system. But having those boundaries, the ability to wait, self-confidence, because every single kid, and this is a crazy statistic that I had read recently in one of the journals, every single kid in today's world will experience some level of bullying. Isn't that crazy? But it's so true.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, because there's, so all of our children, including my children, my son, will experience bullying if he hasn't already, right? And so not only through social media, but all these other things that are happening. So we have to have them understand who they are from a very early age. My son, every single day, Sean, when he gets out of the car, he says affirmations. He says, I'm strong, I'm brave, and I'm smart. And every single day, I don't even have to ask him. Now it's clockwork, right? So I'm building him to have a voice in himself, right? So that he's – and it's systematic. So even though he just may not believe it right now because he's young, he's still systematically speaking it over himself. So giving him that voice to do so, because I'm not always there. And my son is he avoids conflict. So when there's conflict, he'd rather walk away, right? But I want him to have confidence when he walks away and when he chooses to engage the conflict, right? So teaching our kids those skills in today's world, because, again, we're more connected but yet disconnected. You ask kids today.
Yeah.
When I'm talking about older kids that like 13 and older, how many actual friends they have versus how many friends they have on social media, there's a big discrepancy.
So would you say that you're working on his fight or flight response, or do you just let it kind of develop on its own?
No, absolutely. Exactly. You said it exactly right, right? Because what will happen is if we don't help kids learn to, it's what we call emotional regulate. My son, I'm okay mm-hmm. when he gets angry and when he gets frustrated, but he's not to throw any of his toys at me or anything of that nature, right? That's a boundary issue, right, when I'm talking about boundaries. But his expression, so if you meet my son and he's upset, he can say, you know what, I'm frustrated with you right now, Mama. And I'll say, that's okay, Rylan, tell me about it, right? But there's also times where I'm also stern with him, right, because I am raising a young man.
Right.
So there's certain times where I want him to be able to express himself, because if not, then he will act it out, right? And you kind of think about some of these children, we kind of hear about some of these stories, and we look back at their psychological makeup. There was a lot going on in that brain, and their parents were like, I had no idea, right? Because sometimes it starts, we groom our kids to who we want them to be. So I grew up in the family system, and I would imagine you probably had a similar background, is don't cry, I'm going to give you something to cry about. Children are seen and not heard, right? So then
yep.
we create this imaginary world and this fantasy world. I remember being in the car and thinking about, I can't wait till I'm older and adult. And I can't wait to get out of this house, right? So you have these thoughts that are in your head. And in my coping yep. mechanism, because what people don't realize, that coping mechanism that was being developed with that thought process was escape. Because you know what? I want to avoid, right? So what do you think my dysfunctional pattern was? My dark side was to avoid conflict, you know? So it all relates
away,
to
right?
who we are. So when we're raising children, we have a huge job.
God, that is, you know, I believe, in my opinion, I know how many people this is going to make mad, but I'm always an opinionated person, and I always give unsolicited advice. So I believe that you nailed it just now by saying, oh, my parents are this way, and I hate my parents, and oh, my gosh, you're so mean, and this, that, and the other. When I have kids, I'm going to be this way. And then you do it that way, and you quickly find out that you have undisciplined children. Or that they're
yep.
not empowered enough because you gave everything to them. Or they're not
yep.
fighting hard enough for anything because they don't have a purpose, they don't have a passion because you've given everything
yep.
to them, you've given them the participation trophy. I didn't grow up in a household where my mommy tucked me in at night and told me bedtime stories and told me she loved me. Like, that's not what I grew up with. It was, get your butt in bed right now, whatever, screaming at me. Then my mom would come in later crying, give me a kiss, like, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, and then leave, and then go back to arguing. And like, by the time I was 18, I lived in 11 different houses and attended 8 different schools. We get evicted, we get kicked out, we lived with my grandparents for a little bit. I mean, it's just so, like, my childhood was wrecked, you know? And I remember making money in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, shoveling snow in Michigan just to give it to my mom, because the other guy wouldn't let her have any money, would take all of the money, even though she was the one working and he was the one staying home, because he had habits and he couldn't get employed because he had, you know, jail time and whatever else. So she was working 2 or 3 jobs to feed everybody, and he would take all the money. That's what I grew up with. So when I look at my kids now, I look at what I think made me strong, what I think I overcame, and try to teach them that, look, you're going to go through hard stuff, whatever that hard stuff is, a friend hurt you, whatever. I let them try to help, you know, try to figure it out rather than just give them all the answers and be like, oh, just do it this way and see you later and run along. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Us saying,
exactly,
oh, my parents did this to us, and I don't like my parents because of this. And when I have kids, I'm gonna baby them, and I'm gonna treat them right, and I'm gonna, you know, whatever. And then you do that, and you quickly see that maybe that. I don't really think that there's one set way of parenting. Totally don't think that.
No.
I do know
no.
what not to do, though. That was definitely modeled for me, what not to do.
Right.
But I don't believe that there's one set way of parenting, but there has to be a way that we are empowering our kids to do great big things.
Exactly. And you said some key points is there's not one way, because another consideration we have to have is our children's personality. You know, they learn and they process differently just as we do, right? So if you have multiple children, you can have a standard of discipline in the home, but how each is going to respond will be different. One child may want to, may have to pull out their feelings, where another one may be expressive. So the one that has to pull out their feelings, you may have to spend a little bit more time with them. So, right, so you're going to adjust to the child. But another key thing that you said is that you don't just give them the answers. I kind of look at it also from a biblical standpoint. Like, we're training our children. When they're children, we train them, so to speak. And then when they're teenagers, we are now coaching them. And then when they're adults, you're now their consultant. So when you're training them, you're not just taking the ball, so to speak, if we kind of make the analogy of sports, and you're kicking the ball for them. You're coaching them and you're telling them how to kick that soccer ball and mm-hmm. how to make the goal. And you're cheering them along. You're right. So you're right there, but they do it themselves. And, you know, the love and logic parent says, you know what, I'm going to love you, but yet also, you know, you put the responsibility on them, and that responsibility is going to look differently age appropriately. So if my son wants mm-hmm. to have playtime, there are certain things he has to do. And I will say, well, I guess you don't want to have playtime because you didn't do these things. But if you do these things, then you can have your playtime. The choice is yours, right? So you're giving them the choice so that you're not this frustrated parent, and then you're parenting out of frustration. But there has to be a foundation for that.
Parenting out of frustration. Yeah, totally. What I like to do real quick is kind of do like a rapid fire yes or no, or say not complicated, and we'll kind of dive into that. But about mental health, can we do that? Or mental illness, can we do that real quick?
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm curious, ADD, ADHD, mental illness, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Oh, I had ADHD growing up. Well, I was diagnosed with ADHD is what they told me, and I needed Ritalin or, you know, whatever. So autism, mental illness?
And the reason why I say that is in the Diagnostical Manual of Mental Disorders. So that's how we mm-hmm. Officially diagnose it, right? So sometimes, to your point, sometimes people can throw those things around, but they're not officially diagnosed. But we have a statistical manual that gives us the criteria and the things to say that this is a mental disorder, but it would fall under that umbrella.
Got it. So autism, mental illness?
Yes.
Down syndrome, mental illness?
No.
No, it's not. Why is that not?
Because it's not in our diagnostic criteria. So I look at what's in our mental, it's our DSM is what we call it. So it's not mm-hmm. listed in our Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is DSM-5 right now from the American Psychiatric Association.
Oh, very cool. Well, the reason I ask these is it seems to be not like a trend, but it seems to be, you know, people coming on the autism spectrum a lot, and they're blaming it on vaccines, they're blaming it on, you know, different things. But the reason I ask these, because I don't know, maybe somebody else doesn't know, but you mentioned the manuals and different things. So if someone is unsure of if this or this or this would be a mental health disorder, mental illness, whatever, how would they find this out?
Exactly, and I'm glad you asked that question because things are thrown around all the time. So we have assessments and we have psychiatric evaluations. So they would need to go to someone, a psychologist or a licensed psychotherapist that can deliver those services, and they can have assessments, and they can have evaluations, and they can have a diagnosis that would be solid so that can give them treatment. And diagnosis is not to just label people, but it's to give them proper treatment so that they can have fulfilling lives and not be trying to struggle through their challenges. So like with ADHD and ADD, for example, we know what works to help people become more focused and not, you know, because especially being married, you know, when people are married to someone who has ADD, ADHD, we hear the same complaints over and over and over again. And those things are fixable. You know, there has to be multiple things that take place. So when we look at when we diagnose people from the Manual of Mental Disorders, to me, it's not about the labels. It's about I have to put you under this umbrella because we know that from research and from statistics that this is the treatment that's going to help you live a fulfilling life, and you're not going to have to struggle as much than if you're just kind of, okay, well, I have ADHD or I have ADD, and just accept me that way, right? Because there are people that celebrities, lots of people that are very successful. Once you plug people into their passion, oh, my, you know, so you just have to know no treatment and no behavioral modifications that need to happen. And especially for adults that are in relationships is that it just kind of creates relief when a spouse knows, okay, well, my husband or my wife struggles with these types of things and this is how I can help, but this is also how I can hold them accountable too.
Right. Oh, 100%. I like that. You know, I try to ask questions, you know, to the guests that, because if I have a question, I'm sure somebody else, you know, has the question. So as we start to wrap up the show, what is it that you do specifically at Life Counseling Solutions that is really elevating people's lives all around you in the communities? You know, what is it that you're specializing in?
Absolutely. So there are three areas that I specialize in, and that's relational trauma, anger management, and then we're looking at certain mood disorders like depression and anxiety. And then I run a couple of groups. So I run a very popular group taking off, and we're turning it into a conference next year called Women Redeem. And these are women that are mostly six figures, high career functioning women, but they have patterns of toxic relationships, and a lot of them have some type of trauma in their background. So we have that group, and then we have Safe Haven Group, which is a group for women that have experienced sexual trauma in relationship to their marriage. So their husband has repetitively had challenges with pornography, or he's repetitively had affairs, whatever that may be. They've had a sexual trauma, relational trauma. So we run those groups, and those are my focal points. So I work with a lot of couples, and I used to work with a lot of men that had sexual addiction through the Pure Desire Ministry, but that's probably about maybe 10 or 15%. So I work more with the couples and work more with the women, and we use experiential treatment because a lot of times we can't talk our way. You know, as you talked about when you went to therapy, it's fluff. You can't just talk your way out of problems, right? It's just cerebral.
Right.
You have to be able to also work your way out. So, you know, I'm an EMDR therapist, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and it's evidence-based therapy. A lot of people can relate to that with using it with veterans coming back from the war with PTSD effects. Mm-hmm. So we're using eye movement, we're using the brain, we're neutralizing negative charges, because when we get into triggers, we have 20, can you believe this? We have 20 seconds. When we are triggered, we have 20 seconds to make and do some type of behavioral change to get ourselves out of that trigger. If not, that trigger, you know, when you think about when you get upset, when you get that shock, it takes you some time to work out of it. And there's literally, you have a small window to learn how to regulate yourself. So it's very, very popular with our Women Redeem. And experiential therapy is my key. I don't just want to sit and talk to you about your problems. I want to help you work it out. So that's my key.
Right.
Something that we do in our specialty practice.
I love that. One thing that you said something about marriage, sexual trauma. One thing that I did not know, and sometimes it's talked about and, you know, blown off, I'd say probably more often than not kind of blown off, but until I got married, I had no idea that you could actually rape your spouse. I had no idea. Like, that's a thing? That's apparently a thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I was like, no, you're married. That's not, no, I mean, you know that, but like, but no is no. I'm like, ah, come on. I mean, come on. You know, they're like, no, seriously. Like, that's a thing. Like, that's crazy. Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, I mean, if she rolls over and has a headache, or he just isn't interested, or like whatever, and something, I mean, I guess technically that is the definition of, you know, sexual assault. Somebody says no, it doesn't matter, you know. But I'm just
absolutely.
Like, marriage, though? Like, crazy.
Yep, it's what we call marital rape. And what happens is, you know, sometimes it could be from a religious standpoint, sometimes not, where people feel like I own you. They're not necessarily saying that, but two becomes one, right? And this is your obligation.
Right.
They're not using these words, but that happens. But then what happens is that some people, and I hear more times than not, some people will take it, so to speak, and, you know, several couples while they're sleeping, and they do all these types of things, and they don't get the consent of the other partner, which is, and it also makes her or him, because it could go both ways, makes them feel like, you don't respect me, this is all you want, and then they create these narratives in their head, and then there's two people that have this narrative, well, you're neglecting me because you're not having sex with me, and then she's thinking that's all you want, and then you have these two people that are having these conversations in their head, but they're not having these conversations, and then there the marital dance begins. Right, because I can tell, you know, within the first 30 minutes of working with the couple, if we're talking about their sex life can represent 90% of their relationship or 10% of their relationship. If they have a healthy sexual relationship, then it's going to represent 10% of their problems. If they do not have a healthy sexual relationship, then it's going to be 90% of the other non-sexual aspects of the relationship, communication, whatever it may be, that we can tell. So the bedroom is a meter for what's going on in the relationship, because the one thing that separates you from just being friends.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Perfect. I'm in shock and in awe and just I'm blown away at the conversation we've had today. This is everything that I had hoped it would be, plus more. So I want to thank you so much for coming on Life Transformation Radio and really kind of just busting through the stigma and really kind of opening up about these things.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to be on here and to be able to have these conversations because I believe they're important conversations.
Awesome. So as we start to close the show, we do a shameless plug. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebooks, products, programs, services, whatever it is that you want the listeners to know and to do, this is your moment. Shameless plug, go.
Sure, absolutely. So if anyone wants to find out any information about us, they can go to lifecounselingsolutions.com or janielacey.com. My next speaking engagement will actually be in Nashville, Tennessee in January 12th from 10 to 2, doing a transformational conference with two other speakers to help people kick off the new year. As well as next year, we're going to be kicking off in October of 2019, our Women Redeem Conference, and we are bringing in some major headliners to talk about not only mental illness, but toxic relationships. So they can follow us on social media, and we have lots of good stuff that's coming around the bend, so we're looking forward to it.
Awesome. So as we close, we always close with a piece of advice, quote, whatever. So give us something that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
The most important thing that we all can do is at this time of the year is take an evaluation of what's worked for us and what hasn't worked for us and what have we struggled with and what are we most ashamed about. Because it is time for us to get to know our dark side so that we can live our best life and to do the work, and there are professionals, there's many different resources in order for us to do that. But we don't have to keep living the same pattern over and over again. And sometimes people live that pattern just in their mind. So to find a safe place where you can start taking certain things that you may not have spoken or given light to and start dealing with your stuff, because life is short, so we have to do the work because you want to live that impact and be purposeful and live passionately. We all have a purpose. It's just a matter of if we know what it is or not. So we want to do that work, and there are many different resources and things today, more than ever. There are even therapy apps to give people resources right. Just to get started.
Perfect. Love it. So, again, Janie, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been an absolute honor and a blessing having you here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the lives around her and busting through the stigma of the mental health, the mental illness. You know, life happens. And so she is here and her team is here to bust through that substance abuse, the sexual abuse, parenting. We covered a lot in this episode. So if you know anybody that needs to hear this, please share the episode out, but also go to www.lifecounselingsolutions.com and connect with Janie Lacey. She is doing tremendous work in this space. So as we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.